This week on RSBNB Update, we open the September skilling bundle to see whether or not it's a Pandora's box. The Leeds Q&A was cancelled, and we have the real reason why. Tanis unpacks the accessibility issues of the Arch Glacier. Then we also showcase the RuneLite HD debacle. This is RSBNB Update, episode 846, recorded Thursday, September 9th, 2021. Pandora's Skilling Bundle. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tanis, you're back this week. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
It just so happened that you had a wedding to go to on the week of the Glacier Front launch, but we are going to touch base with you on the Glacier Front in just a bit.
Hey, it's cold, Shane. It's cold.
Yeah, I've heard it be called, you know, obviously the Wend Front, the Glacier Front, and the Boss itself has been called the Popsicle and whatnot as well. So there's lots of fun little names about that circulating around. But this week we have a bit of a quieter week on the RuneScape front, let's just say. And we were hoping to have a Leeds Q&A to discuss, but that was canceled. We'll talk about why that was and a great amount of question that went into that and try and shed some light on that. But of course, we have the main update of the week, which is skilling bundles. And if you want to follow along with us, I'll just point you to our full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And of course, you can also join our Discord at rsbnb.com/discord as well if you want to come in there and chat with us, share some of your RuneScape experiences and achievements and whatnot. It's all there. But I am Shane 12088 in game, and he is Tanis 79. So, skilling bundles. Level up your skills with our September bundles, because
how about
September...
that canceled Leeds Q&A, Shane? How'd that go?
Yeah, I mean,
anyway, Ed, sorry.
I think the Leeds Q&A being canceled is something I want to address on its own. Yeah. And the natural conspiracy theory of the Cambridge mob is that the reason the Leeds Q&A was canceled was because of the blowback of this bundle and what's happening on Old School. But of course, we'll get to all that in good time. So Cambridge mob, folks, I hear they're recruiting this week.
You know, if they need some muscle, I'm just saying, the skilling bundle, bridge too far for me. Bridge too far.
Okay. Actually, let me just say that the Cambridge mob is something we came up with. The group behind the scenes pulling the strings at Jagex, making seemingly derailing all the updates that players want to have but don't have. And anytime something is a bump in the road, like the skilling bundle or the Leeds Q&A being canceled, oh, the Cambridge mob is influencing folks like Maud Warden and Maud Osborne and the like, and then down the team we go, and that's what we say. And obviously, anytime there's a question of problems in the community, whether it be this or the Leeds Q&A, Cambridge mob is recruiting because more people join the Cambridge mob at that point. So the Cambridge mob is an analogy of sorts. But okay, so for the price of one bond, you can get 10 pulse cores, 10 cinder cores, 3 medium protein packs, 5 portable packs, 5 combat dummies, 2 large skilling dummy crates, 1 box of clues, 1 aura refresh, and 1 life refresh. Now, if you kick it up to 3 bonds, you will get 30 pulse cores, 30 cinder cores, 3 large protein packs, 15 portable packs, 15 combat dummies, 6 large skilling dummy crates, 3 boxes of clues, 5 aura refreshes, 5 life refreshes, 5 Slayer VIP coupons, 5 daily resets, 2 weekly resets, 1 monthly reset, 1 death touch darts, and 5 overloads. These are available for purchase until September 25th. So this is a bridge too far for you?
Yeah, do you see the problem? You see the problem here?
I don't know. You tell me what you see as the problem.
Two main things. One, they would have been fine, but why include clue boxes and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't ever remember clues ever coming into the game through Treasure Hunter or anything like that.
No, the closest we have on that is Yak Track.
And that's a pretty... Yeah, and that's...
Yeah.
That's not the same thing.
And the clue boxes, I actually don't see as much of an issue because each box of clues only gives two clues. And you can go farm that in-game so fast. And the clue boxes skew heavily towards easy, medium, and hard. As in, it's going to be very rare to get a... an elite clue scroll, and very, very rare to get a master clue scroll. The odds that the wiki gives for the master clue scrolls are 1 in 1,222, and for the elite clues, 67 in 1,222, and the rest skews down to easy, medium, and hard. And quite honestly, if you want to go farm easy, medium, and hard clue scrolls, there's plenty of fun monsters that you could just go kill and cannon and pick those up.
Okay.
So I don't see the box of clue scrolls as a problem in this. I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
Well, how do you feel about the overloads?
And see, this is the thing with this. I've been doing a bit of PVM recently. And 5 overloads is really not that much. That's
not
2 and a bit hours of PVM.
But you're thinking about it. You're not thinking about the yes, it's not much as in gameplay using overloads. But it's not really about that. It's about overloads were that item. That was what we always compared these.
Right, the thing you had to get 96 Herblore for. Okay,
and it was something that you couldn't cheat your way around, right? Yeah. Like even if you were into PVM, you still had to do Herblore. Like you had to. So when you do something like this, then that makes me think, okay, well let's throw a catalog.
You can only purchase this one time, so at most it's 5.
Right, but how? I mean, I don't know.
And the one thing I'm wondering is it overload 3 doses? 4 doses or flasks?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes a difference, but it's that getting around it, man. It's I can't think of anything else that we've had like that. And
you just raised a very good point. This is the canary in the coal mine to see how selling this kind of thing goes forward with this. Because what you have here is a number of items that will boost your XP rates at the end of the day, and in some cases make it easier for you to refresh auras, lives, and do weekly D&D stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I think this is just a bit of a taster to see, how are people going to react to this? How many of these are we going to sell?
Well, the thing is, we've all grown accustomed to the other items.
Yeah.
I don't particularly think there's a problem with the other items. They all exist. They all exist on Treasure Hunt.
Right.
They're all things that you can buy for money. But these particular items were locked behind content in game and like really heavy content in game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And that's the difference between the small and the large pack is that, you get one box of clues, which is 2 clue scrolls, which is, I'm going to discount that, but I'm going to focus primarily on the large pack. The difference being with the large pack is you get the things like the Death Touch Dart and the overloads. Yeah. And that's the general thing to see, okay, how many smalls and larges do we sell combined, but how many more larges do we sell than smalls? And based on that, we can assume it's things like the resets, like the Death Touch Darts, like the overloads that are selling it. And because of that, this is the next step forward to the new monetization strategy, which we've seen plenty of those before. We talked about Yak Track 2 weeks ago when that came out, or 3 weeks ago when that came out. I forget where we're at. 2 weeks ago now, with the 25% XP boost and people rushing to the end with that. This week on Treasure Hunter, it's the Rainbow promotion, and all the multipliers are unlocked off the bat, which, I mean, if you get 200 mil come up and you roll that 7, ooh, there's 1.4 bill. Ooh, people might want to spend some nice money on that. So,
see, and I thought we had a direction we were going.
Right.
I thought we had kind of like an uneasy agreement.
Yeah.
And this is, I never would have imagined it going this direction.
And like, you see what's happening with this is that this is slowly ramping up the monetization efforts. I mean, it's quite clear that's what the goal has been for the last few weeks.
Oh, well, yeah, it's clear the goal, but I mean, this is how I see this, Shane. Like if we can, it may be a one-time purchase.
Yeah.
But breaking that ceiling, yep, and being able to purchase overloads.
You don't go back from that.
And why not be able to buy any item? Why couldn't I just buy a Saren God bow? Why couldn't you?
Right? There could be one of those in the future. We're not normally onto this bandwagon that this is the direction that it's going to go. But obviously, there's some folks inside the monetization part of the company who want to try these things.
Yeah, I think when you trade XP and money, it really equates to time.
Yeah,
and
you can make an argument for that.
And people fundamentally understand that. When you go into this, they already have a system for this that works.
Yeah.
It's called bonds.
Yeah.
And it works really well.
Yeah.
But now I really don't like, and I really don't like those special things being circumvented like that. I wouldn't mind anything else. Anything of an appropriate level, I guess. I don't know. Or maybe something that was scalable for you in the game. If,
like a scalable weapon or something like that.
Well, I meant like scalable potions, right?
Oh,
like,
okay.
You know, if you had the herb lore level,
you'd get overloads.
And that's fine. You know, that I don't have as big of a problem with, even though I still don't like it, because I still think it leads to the item for purchase, you know, scenario. But it's still better than what we got.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, we've had this discussion so many times before. Everybody says they want Treasure Hunter to go away. And we've warned time and time again on this show that if that's the direction the community asks for monetization to go in the game, on top of the subscriptions, this is the next logical step with this. And I'm not saying that this is necessarily a good thing. What I'm saying is that this is the next logical step of monetization for the game if we're going to move away from things like Treasure Hunter. And, you know, personally, in regards to only being 5 overloads, I don't have a problem with this yet. And that's where I come down on this. So.
Yeah, I just, it makes me real jittery. Just because it really, to me, kind of came out of left field. Like I said, and I'm only talking about those specific items that,
right,
you know, I mean, you make some good points about the clue scrolls. I mean, yes, you can get them in game, but now you see what I'm saying. It's items for purchase. And that's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like in game, you know what I mean? Like in game items for purchase.
Yeah. And I completely understand where you're coming from on that. But, you know, I think with that, that's something that the community was quick to foist on the Leeds Q&A this week, because that was canceled. And, you know, I think now is a good time to move into that, because we went over what was in the bundle, what it's likely being used for, and where that could potentially lead. And we'll, of course, keep our eyes open with that. But the Leeds Q&A was canceled this week, and the messaging put out by Mod Hooley said that this was canceled because the studio air conditioning went down in the UK heat wave that was going on. And it was, you know, 25 to 30 Celsius in parts of the UK this week. And
so hot.
Yeah, hot. And they wouldn't have wanted to send the producer into the production room without air conditioning to have that happen.
They would have been sweating anyway.
Yeah, and, you know, one thing that we also need to realize is that, and this is something that the community missed on this, is that anytime you're dealing with lots of production equipment for video, audio, lots of computers in a room like that, combine that with ambient heat outside, you need air conditioning for that room, and you don't want to be in that room, even if the studio lights aren't turned on. So I am on the record that I 100% believe what they're saying in regards to the reason that the Q&A was canceled, because, you know, I've been in these situations before where you go into a computer room without air conditioning and you don't want to spend more than 5 minutes in there. And in reality, you really also don't want to be taxing equipment when it's that hot in there without proper air conditioning. So I believe what was said on this. It's just rather unfortunate that the community at this time is, you know, running with this and saying that, oh, they're canceling it because of obviously the reaction to the skilling bundle, because of what's happening in old school, which we'll get to later. But I have to say that their explanation about the air conditioning is likely 99.9% true. So
it, you know, is it the Cambridge mob or yeah, is it Caymanon? No, I mean, they have grown.
I think the Cambridge mob is better yeah, way of describing it.
I look at you know, there's a saying down south. It's, you know, the sun shines on a sick dog's ass. Yeah. Well, that's what happened here.
Yeah.
It was the best possible happy coincidence break that JetGigs ever got. Because it would have been, I think, a hot, hot Q&A.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen them try.
Oh, how funny would it be though? Like it'd just be sweat.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, I think it was a lucky break. I don't think there was anything sinister behind it.
Right,
the condition probably went down.
And because you call it a lucky break, that's precisely why the Cambridge mob comes out and says that they're lying about it. So.
No, sometimes.
The topics.
Sometimes the sun shines on a sick dog's head.
But the topics that were going to be talked about on this one include the Elder God Wars continuation, the new skilling bundle, plans for death costs, bugs feedback, and a whole lot more. That's interesting that they're almost ready to talk about something with death costs.
I bet they have seen the engagement for bossing during these boss release weeks, just with the non-related boss even.
Oh, yeah.
They probably see the traffic go up so greatly that they're like, maybe we're losing something here. Like,
yeah, and I know there was a wonderful proof inside of JagX that was, well, they said it was wonderful. Obviously, we haven't seen it yet, but they said it was very good, wonderful proof of concept and design document for death cost. So maybe they were going to share something along the lines of that. So they aim to try and do the Q&A next week, but they say it's very hard to schedule these kind of things with the people they want to have on board with it. So I hope that our listeners are not going to succumb to the Cambridge mob and believe the explanation that was put out. And I guess I'll just reiterate it. Anytime you have a production studio, those studios are always run with air conditioning and even below what you would, a couple degrees below what you would run your own house temperature at, just because there's so many computers and lights and other pieces of equipment in there that all generate heat. And if it's going to be hot outside, you just want those pieces of equipment to run at a nice room temperature so that you don't shorten their lifespans. And let's just say that they needed, I think it's Mod Spear, who runs these things behind the scenes. Let's just say they needed him to show up on video as well. They'd have to turn the lights on in terms of like the production lights, not necessarily the overhead fluorescent lights, but the production lights, and that'd be even more heat. And with that, it would just be a recipe for disaster. So I can see why this would be the case. And anybody who's worked in sound or live video like this before won't know what I'm talking about. So, all right.
Yep.
Ready to talk about the Arch Glacier?
Yeah. That's a cold-hearted SOB, that thing. I had a chance to go down there and check it out, Shane.
Yeah, and did you start with no mechanics, or did you just turn them all on, or what did you do?
Well, first I just wanted to, I had prepared and was going to do melee, and then the more I watched, the more I saw, I'm like, this probably isn't going to work. So I switched to ranged. Which I had like Serenic, but I didn't have really that good of a weapon. And I went down there and I tried it with no mechanics, just so I could get a feel for
the creeping ice.
That, and I wanted to see what the accessibility, like if I was going to need to put it in a skybox, if there was, just get a basic feel. Yeah. So when I started, I noticed right away that I was running into a very familiar stumbling block, which was when you magnify like I am, even though I might be, you know, swinging way to the side and clicking my mouse, you know, way far away on my monitor. It's magnified, right? So I'm not actually moving that far.
Right.
And by the time, you know, that happens and I click again, it just makes me real slow. And, you know, so I couldn't really get out of the way very well. Now, that being said, the creeping ice was never an issue.
All right.
Never had a problem with that. The glacier itself, I couldn't really see it real well, but there's some kind of outlining on it that I thought was black, but talking to Shane, I guess it isn't. But there's some kind of like edges to it that kind of reminded me of a comic book, and I could kind of like, that's what I kind of
interesting
could see. So then I tried to step it up with the minions, and quickly found myself just spinning my gears because I couldn't kill the minions with the weapons I had quick enough to take the boss down. I never died. I just got tired of like sitting there killing minions.
Right. Because if you don't kill the minions, you can't do damage to it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that was the issue with that. So I went and got melee, came back, and ripped through that with no problem. And I didn't have any problems. Like, for some reason, when I watch other people's videos and stuff, it seemed lighter than what it was for me when I was in there on the bridge. Like, I could see the bridge really well, but when I watch it back on videos, it blends in more. So I don't know if that's just because I'm, you know, so much more magnified in because I'm playing or what. But then I tried the, you know, like the little light pillars.
Yep.
And did fine with that.
Pillars of ice.
Yeah, the pillars of
ice.
That's
interesting because that one is my most difficult mechanic.
Really? See, yeah. I didn't make it. Like, I ran into my wall with the big frost. The
frost cannon?
Single, yeah, the big dump, you're dead. Yeah. That one.
Because it starts spinning in the background, and then you got to devotion it or use some kind of defensive to mitigate.
Yeah, but with no, I mean, there's no noticeable sound cue, so I never knew it was coming, and it just dropped me, pretty easily. The pillars, though, what
And
I
it is worth
found,
noting that there are chat cues for this.
yeah, I mean, I probably could have set up an alt one, but it just,
But once again, you
I wasn't
shouldn't
going through
have
all
to do
that.
that to find success.
Yeah. But I'll tell you where I did, the way I found success with the pillars was just to break it down as simple as I could. And I noticed, probably from all those 90 Nintendo games, that if I just went the width of the bridge, a lot of times, either going north or south, you would avoid them. So it was like minimal movement for me. And so that worked out pretty well. But then once we got to the Frost Cannon, there, like I said, I just couldn't find any warning. It dropped me every time.
What about the exposed core where you have to go through its arms?
I never did that.
Okay, so you
I
never did
never
that
did that
one.
mechanic because
Okay.
I never, yeah, I was, yeah. I'm guessing that would not have worked well. Just from everything else that I experienced in a fight, I don't think that would have went probably very well. Because it probably would have been a movement issue.
Yeah. So overall,
Well, overall, it was the same the same ankle biting problem with for me, which is field of
that you
view,
had with
which isn't
Carapac.
that I had a care pack, and that's not necessarily a Jagex boss thing, right? That's a magnification thing, that's a me thing. But the other problems it had are more of a design thing.
Okay, and I assume we're going to talk about color here.
Color is a big one. There was no, I think that I just think that my screen is a little, it's tuned a little bit different because I could see those pillars. Now I couldn't tell you what color they were. I have no idea,
They're very,
but
very light blue, almost white.
okay. So and I didn't really see much of them like in verticality. I just kind of looked for them like you looked for the strike worms kind of
Okay.
thing, right? But once again, when I would watch videos, I couldn't hardly see them at like not as well. But that's part of the prayer, right? The prayers. Switch
No,
if you're really
that is not a prayer switch. That is just
okay.
avoid them because otherwise you'll take damage and get your prayer points sapped.
Okay, well, there was one, it's maybe that was the core or something, but
Yeah, that one you need to pray magic on, and the cannon you need to pray magic on.
okay, yeah, I prayed magic, I just kept praying magic the whole way
All right.
through, but. Mostly, like I said, if you have a if you're gonna have an instant kind of or basically an instant death mechanic, gotta give some kind of audio cue that it's coming. It's just anything,
And
because I'm
to be
a
fair,
set and done.
you are used to looking around and trying to look for these audio cues, and the fact that you weren't able to find one is a problem, I think, for these
Yeah, I
attacks.
mean. If someone heard it or someone knows like it can tell me that, I mean, that'd be
Thinking
great.
back, I can't tell you what the audio cues are because I just know what to look for. It's not something that entered into my mind personally.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. So that I mean that's the big one. Here's the great thing though. On other levels, it's probably the best and most accessible boss they've ever made.
Yeah, and that was our stance as well, is that if you want to, learn PVM, we used to say, start with the mole and then work your way up to QBD. Now the answer is this.
Right, and you think of that as like a regular, game accessibility kind of thing, but like it actually can be a accessibility issue, depending on, you know, if there's some kind of cognitive issue or whatever, be hard to follow all of those kinds or remember.
Yeah.
You know, if you had problems with your memory, sometimes it could be very difficult. So being able to break a boss down like that is groundbreaking. So I don't want to take away from that. Like I said, most of the issues I ran into were the same old issues.
So effectively what you're saying is that they just need to put this boss through an accessibility designer focusing on color blindness, contrast, and for people who are hard of sight.
And some sound would be great.
Sound cues, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, overall, that's not that bad. But at the same time, if I'll even say myself, doing the boss, I spend an hour doing it, looking at my computer screen. I get up, my entire room seems darker because I've been looking at this blue for an hour, and I don't think that's good for my eyes.
Yeah, probably not.
And, you know, I wear glasses, and my eyesight with the glasses is, of course, corrected to 20/20. But with that being said, I think it would have been nice to have some extra contrast on there and just not have the darn thing be so blue.
Yeah, it really, really could use some more contrast. Would have been good. The one thing that I fully expected and didn't find was I thought it would maybe be too busy and have too much visual clutter.
Right. Because this is only one mechanic at a time now.
Yeah. So it wasn't, you know, that
until you get to hard mode.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably nasty.
Because you can get the cannon and minions at the same time. In reality, on hard mode, you can get the core and minions at the same time if you don't kill the minions fast enough. So
okay.
You just got to be quick with it. Because with hard mode, of course, the it scales in terms of how hard it hits over time. It also scales its HP over time. And this is what you said. It's basically Ice Telos.
Yeah. But look at this, Shane. Like, I couldn't even stay alive during Carapac. I couldn't even stay alive.
Yeah.
Like, they were not doing anything. I mean.
But you got the kill here.
This one I got the kill, and I got the kill with, like, what, three mechanics? So, I mean, it's not the full experience, but that gave me, a buy-in to a new boss that I didn't have with Carapac, because I didn't care.
Yeah.
I knew there's no way I could do that boss. This one, I'm like, oh, well, this is kind of neat. I mean, I actually prepared. Like, I made my masterwork and stuff and went through
we worked on some perks for that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, all in all, I'm very pleased with the progress and, you know, the things that dog RuneScape Combat, just dog RuneScape Combat.
Yeah, and that's more of a general problem. But overall, this speaks pretty good for the Ice Glacier, I think. So that's good to hear. It's good to hear. All right, we're going to move on to the patch notes. But before we do that, I'd like to thank some Patreon supporters this week. You guys make the show what it is, and you allow us to do all the fun monthly bits and all that other fun extracurricular stuff like the round tables and whatnot. So this week I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C, Arvids L, Brock H, Christian S, Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plox, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Free Milk, Jade Gizmo, Jason S, Jesse W, Keski, Lucky Ducky, Nate the Great, Ren Hawk, Ricky A, Samuel FL, Scott DS, Soupfinder, Stabby, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It does truly mean the world to us, and we're working up to that Patreon mail-out when we hit the $200 mark. But, of course, we also do have that long stretch goal of the RSVNB Update Hot One special, should we ever reach $500 a month, in which Tannis and I will hurt our taste buds. You know, I was looking forward to that a bit. It's kind of waned a little bit right now in terms of if I think I'll be able to handle it. But you know what the hell? Once in a lifetime thing, right?
You know, I think I'm going to have to insist, Shane, that you send me one of those cheap Canadian EpiPens just in case go badly.
You can't get them without a prescription, so I can't do that for you.
Oh, damn it. You know how much that stuff costs here?
A lot, I'd bet. A lot.
A lot. A lot. What happens if my tongue swells up, Shane? What if I can't speak?
I think it'll sound like that if your tongue was swollen. But nonetheless, if you want to help us out, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. You can join them for as little as $1 a month. You gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, including the Clue Scroll monthly bit that just went out last weekend. We recorded that with Derp from Climb Quest. He's an avid cluer. Helped us a lot with that, and we had a fun discussion about Clue Scrolls and making money. You get all that and more for as little as $1 a month. If you want to take it up a tier, we have a $3 a month tier, the VIP tier. You'll get high-quality stereo versions of the podcast each and every week, in addition to everything else, including helping fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. And should you want to give the ultimate gift, for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out each and every week on the show. And you also gain early access to the clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year for $5 a month, in addition to all the other previous rewards. And there might be a good one in there from pre-show this week. So if this sounds interesting to you, check it out at patreon.com/rsbnb. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks.
Alrighty, so to patch notes we go. And the reason we just were talking about the Arch Glacier is because there's a number of patch notes that came in for the Arch Glacier this week, including hot fixes. So this week, a bank preset was added for the Arch Glacier, the name Arch Glacier, if you want to have that of your bank presets. They adjusted the instance teleport coordinate on the Arch Glacier so that players can surge straight away upon entering. Of course, everybody loves getting around with surge. I've never seen the appeal of that. Do you surge around?
No, dude. I run into walls if I do that and just stick into stuff. Nah.
Oh, that's hilarious. All right. They fixed an issue that was presenting the insane final boss achievement from unlocking correctly with the Arch Glacier. The Arch Glacier was dropping bones for a bit, and the question in the patch note is, where was it even getting those? Because it's just made of ice. An issue has been fixed where incorrect armor values were being applied to the new enhanced tier 90 glove upgrades introduced with the Glacier Front update. An issue has been fixed preventing the exposed core and Glaciite minions from working as expected at high enrage tiers during the Arch Glacier boss fights. That's not a problem for me or you yet, but that's good. That's been fixed. Broadcasts have been added for the frozen core of Lang and Lang artifact. Fixed an issue that meant the Arch Glacier boss would die due to damage over time effects, which could kill the player in certain situations. So if you put a dot on it and killed it, somehow that could kill you. That is weird.
Yeah, it seems bad.
The Pontifex Ring was reducing prayer damage resistance rather than increasing it as planned.
Oops.
It was supposed to increase it to 60%, so it was probably making it 40 instead of 50. So that's maybe that's why I felt on day one that I was having that the ring really didn't help.
Yeah. Oops.
Uncut dragon stones when I'll drop in noted form. Good. The normal mode damage reduction no longer kicks in after you have completed all mechanics during an encounter. Yeah. That is a problem. The third beam of the Pillars of Ice mechanic in the hard mode Arch Glacier boss fight will no longer disappear and reappear when the mechanic ends. Manuscripts and scriptures of Wen will now drop correctly. For the first few days, they didn't drop. And this prevented people from getting an accurate read on how decent they were. So, I feel kind of disappointed that I didn't get them on the first day, but I got a few scripture pages on subsequent days.
Now, do you, okay, how does the drop thing, like, work? You have to, does it have to be at all mechanics for it to be, like, a drop?
No. You get drops on no mechanic kills. It's just you get less.
But, like, what is the limit? Like, there has to be, like, a ceiling to it. You know what I mean? Like, you could get, like, you couldn't possibly get, like, the other stuff, right? The rares.
The only thing that you can't get on a normal mode kill is the Frozen Core of Lang.
Okay.
That's the only thing you can't get on normal mode. The number of mechanics will influence how rare other things are, but the only things that are unique to hard mode are the Frozen Core of Lang.
And that's for the weapon, right?
For the tier 95 weapons, yeah. But okay. Dark Nihilus, Scripture of Wind, Lang Artifact, Glacier Remains, all of that can come from normal mode.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. I figured there, you know, was some kind of like limit to that.
No. And that's what's so interesting about this is that you can get good drops from doing five normals, but if you're streaking at, I forget what the enrage was that's recommended for streaking on this. I think it's something, I think it's in the hundreds, maybe 200-ish or so. I could be wrong on that. Somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. But outside of normal mode, it's good, but it becomes more profitable at hard mode. And this was actually something else that they fixed on, I think, the Wednesday or Thursday after it came out, is that for a while, it was just more profitable to be to do normal mode until they fixed the numbers for hard streaks. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you streak, you're going to get rewarded for it. It's as simple as that. So,
I don't know about that, Shane.
Yeah. I see where you're going with that. Triskelion's drop from the Archglacier will no longer be multiplied by enrage or mechanic modifiers.
Okay.
So if you had a higher enrage, you get more Triskelions, and we know that those can be lucrative in themselves. So that's neat.
Because you might get a clue.
Yeah. Rejoining a hard mode Archglacier instance after toggling it off will no longer place you in a pseudo hard mode encounter. So you'd have all the damage and difficulty of hard mode, but it wouldn't actually be hard mode. And that's really all we got for notable patch notes this week on the Archglacier. Couple more hot fixes. Fixed an issue where sequential attacks of the same type from the same side of the Archglacier were not appearing, and the bolstered glaciates will no longer set the Archglacier's health when they die. That's an interesting one. So, overall, it felt rough last week, and I think they could have delayed it to being out with some of these things wired in, but I think at this point in time, people are enjoying it. I mean, if I look at the Clan Quest feed, I still see people going there to fight the Glacier. So, but moving on to Nodon Front patch notes, the needle in the Colosseum in Centistan can now be examined. And the exam info is that a faint light glows from its fractured shell. Could it be close to breaking?
What happens if the needle breaks?
I don't know.
Does time stand still?
Maybe.
Forever and ever?
That better not be the way out of this whole Elder Gods mess.
The time just stands still.
Ay. Or it could maybe cause an even bigger problem. Which I don't think we'd want. So. But who knows? I can't imagine an Elder artifact breaking being a good thing. Achievements that require the boss to be killed in a certain way no longer will be awarded to players who joined in the middle of an encounter, so they can't be farmed. When a player dies in the wilderness with the died version of the Fractured Staff of Armadil equipped, they will leave the broken base version of it as loot. Oh boy. I would hate to lose something like that in the wilderness.
I've seen it. Well, actually, I've seen the excitement of someone picking it up.
The overlapping abandoned siege engine in the Nodon front has been removed. And the materials cart in the Nodon front has been moved slightly north. So, some little things for the Nodon front with that. Centistan Archaeology also got a look this week with time sprites now being made visible. And, you know, this seems to be something that we have a problem with in most dig sites, is that time sprites disappear sometimes. And they're now visible when traveling between excavation hotspots in Centistan. And this one breaks Thaxi's heart. Decorative shovels in Centistan can no longer be interacted with.
Summer.
So there we have it. Quality of life-wise, and this is where the patch notes get interesting this week, Slayer and Reaper tasks in the activity tracker now include a weakness field in their description, which highlights the most effective combat style, and during a task, an icon for this weakness will replace its activity tracker icon. That's good.
Okay.
And we know what things are going to be weak to when we're doing Slayer, because we've been around the block a few times. But this is a godsend for people who are just starting out, because as your attack level is lower, that means you have a lower chance to hit, and you really want to play to this whole weakness thing. So it helps that they're able to see that directly now from the activity tracker. The text which appears when hovering over the Slayer counter, if you are able to capture the target's soul and have not yet done so, will also appear in the activity tracker for that task. And Slayer and Reaper tasks in the activity tracker will now continue to display the name of the target when there are no kills left, instead of displaying no task. This makes it more consistent with the Slayer and Reaper counter. And the reason this one is important is because one of the hallmarks of a good user interface in general is that you have a level of consistency between your UI. And this is just bringing that consistency in, and it helps across the board when looking at the activity tracker. The hover / long press tooltips for various drinks will now include a description of their stat buffs and debuffs. The tooltips for run energy potions and drinks now indicate the percentage of run energy restored instead of a solid integer. That makes sense, because you're dealing with percent run energy. Now, do you know what a mature WMB is? No. Idea what a mature WMB would be?
I feel like it's a search you shouldn't do on Google.
It was the Wizard Mind Bomb Mature, and they renamed the Mature WMB to Wizard's Mind Bomb M to be consistent with other mature drinks.
Or it goes about the time, or the, wait, the Wizard Time Bomb?
Wizard Mind Bomb.
Mind Bomb. Yes, I remember that. That. Okay, yes. I didn't know there was a mature version. It must be for like a quest or something, huh?
No, the mature versions just provide a higher stat buff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I remember using these back in the day to boost my magic level.
Back when that actually...
Yeah, back when that was actually needed.
Yeah.
So, boosts magic levels and heals 340 life points for the base one. Now... I don't know what it boosts it by. The wiki is letting me down on that, so I'm not going to be able to look up what the mature version of it says. The mature one boosts by 3. So,
okay.
Do you remember when farming came out? That one of the economic rushes at the time that people invested in making was they started brewing with all the hops.
I don't think I was here when Farming released. When was that, Shane?
2006.
Yeah, that was before my time.
Oh, 2005. I'm sorry. July 2005. I messed up the year. Oh no. Oh, no. That's not good.
Oh, gee.
Anyways, nettle tea will now heal and restore run energy in all circumstances. Previously, it only restored run energy when the drinker had full health. All right. That's a bit of an edge case, but I can see that being useful at lower levels. Now, for the Berthorpe path and what we can effectively call the new player experience, they replaced the unpopular RS3 default layout with the current new player layout so that new players can experiment more freely, and renamed the RS2 default layout to default since there's now only one layout with the default title. And I need to be completely honest here. The differences between new player and so-called default are so minor at this point that we should just delete this one that they're now calling default, because I feel like the way RuneScape should be played in order to create that same consistency again with the legacy UI, because yeah, that still exists in game. I feel like having the default one that we're talking about right now really doesn't help anyone, and we should just have the new player layout and just call that default. Realize how god darn confusing this sounds.
Mm-hmm. I'm confused already. I don't know.
Oh boy. All right, continuing on, the farming, herblore, and summoning paths are now listed in the Berthorpe and Taverly path book upon completing the Turial Slayer path. Previously, they were unlocked by receiving certain drops available from Berthorpe trolls after completing the Slayer path. On mobile only, the activity tracker UI tutorial that guides a new player onto the Berthorpe paths now guides them through pressing the static activity tracker button in the top left corner to open it. And on desktop, it starts where it always did with the activity tracker on screen. And that's nice that this is here, because, you know, we talked about this last month, the entire new player experience, and we determined that it's actually a good new player experience if nobody's ever played it before. And it reinforces RuneScape's core loop of finding achievements and going for it. So it's nice to just see these things being iterated on here.
Yeah.
And then wrapping up the patch notes this week, fixed an issue where players could walk inside a rock in Davendale.
All right.
And Johannes has returned to both the cathedral and the node on front, and he is the guy we talked to for the cultist journey yak track tasks. And I made some comparisons when that yak track came out, that it seemed as though that Jagex might have wanted to go inside a certain direction about this, and, you know, let's just say make fun of certain religious heretics or certain very devout people. And I went through so far three of these yak track tasks, and I looked up the lore to the fourth one, and, you know, I thought that they might have went that way, but I can say that my concerns really didn't materialize on that. And the whole reason I brought that up is it just feels like in this day and age we just have to be so careful with an abundance of caution that we're not inherently poking fun at anyone or any specific group of people, no matter who they might be. And sometimes it's just very easy to do that without realizing, and I just had a suspicion that it might go that way, but I'm glad to say that it didn't. So that's good. Players will no longer be assigned random slayer tasks when wearing particular masks. I wonder which ones were broken. Because wouldn't you hate to wear your Abyssal Demon mask and get, I don't know, assigned Aquanites or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's when you're going to have to pony up the points for that one.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no.
So that's good. That's been fixed. And finally, corrected an issue where some achievements that require specific skill levels were not complete when logging in. Yeah, there's your patch notes for the week, everyone. All right. So, it wouldn't be an Elder God Wars week without going through the voice work for what the gods had to say this week. And as anticipated, right on time on September 6th, at reset, the gods had new dialogue for us. So, Zamorak is still marveling at the glaciers, and Ceridoman isn't really impressed with that. And Zamorak tries to provide a bit of a history lesson, saying, you know, these creatures, they're not even native to Lang, and the creature itself is only the core. Ceridoman is brushing him off. Yes, yes, fascinating. And Zamorak provides some really interesting information for us, I think, on this. He says, they began as motes of wild anima, hurtling through space like comets. They came screaming through Lang's atmosphere, wreathed in fire. They landed, then adapt to the cold, shrouding themselves in icy armor. Armadale doesn't think that's true. Ceridoman's wondering where he heard that nonsense. And Zamorak says, yeah, you know, I have it on good authority from a former subordinate. So, a demon told you, Ceridoman says. Zamorak says, yes. And you believed it? He had no reason to lie to me, and great incentive not to. And it's a fantastic story. No, a triumph of strength over adversity. And, of course, this could also, of course, be seen as breaking the fourth wall and saying, hey, yeah, this is what was said in the cutscene. So maybe the cutscene just told Zamorak like the cutscene told us this. Because that was, of course, in the cutscene for the Glacier Front.
Okay.
Yeah, you see why that's a little bit tongue-in-cheek there with that one.
Uh-huh.
Ceridoman actually wants to go and directly fight these things. He says, give me enough Luminite and a few flights of icing grenadiers, and we'll see how strong that Archglacier really is. Zamorak says, now we really are into the realm of myth. Armadale says, in their time, the Aviancy would have also made short work of that glacier, but neither they nor the Icene are here. Ceridoman says, so, it's a fight on the ground, far from ideal. At least the mortals have some divine support. Zamorak says, please, as a Majrod, as an auditor, could barely be extracted from Zaro's robe pleats. He may technically be a god, but he has all the divine strength of a damp towel. So you can see that Zamorak really isn't pleased with Azanadra, because Azanadra is getting a bit of the limelight, and in some ways, Azanadra's and Zaros's ascent to, or Zamorak's ascent to godhood, rather, were technically similar, though Azanadra's didn't start the Third Age God Wars. Armadale warns him to not write Azanadra off so easily, and Saren chimes in for the first time, says, indeed, he was one of the most powerful of your kind, and his knowledge is vast. Azanadra may yet surprise us all. So is that foreshadowing there, that this entire thing's going to maybe come down to Azanadra?
Yeah, and so does that mean that, like, gods get stronger, they're not as strong when they first ascend?
Yeah, that was okay. Established a few weeks ago in this god banter.
Okay, so he'll probably reach his full power just in time then.
Yeah.
To save us all.
Something to that effect, but, you know, the question then becomes, what of these four here? What are they going to do after this is done? And I'd like to point out that Saren was very, very quiet this week. He's probably deep in thought or something to that effect with this. But there's a bit of a quick analysis on this week's God Wars, Elder God Wars banter. And I'm always looking forward to seeing what comes out. And it's become a bit of a Sunday ritual, honestly, for me. So
nice.
All right. So you ready to step into the mirror universe of RuneScape?
You mean the one from back when RuneScape was pure and I don't know. I picture like 1950s America. You know
if that's what it was, I'd be playing old school. All right.
Remember those pure days when people just like cussed you out for landing on the.
Yeah, you and know, that's what happened in this in that era of RuneScape as well. So we are, of course, talking about old school RuneScape, and you know, we don't talk about this that often on the show because it's not a game that we play. But this is something that definitely drew my attention because, as it turns out, you know, there's actually an ecosystem of third party clients for old school RuneScape, which Jagex have not shut down completely, and they've had a very interesting working relationship with them. And with that, this week, it turns out that RuneLite, one of the biggest third-party clients, put out a HD version of old school RuneScape through a plugin. And as a result of that, Jagex shut it down. And wanted to shut down that entire project with this. And they say that the reason for this is that they are actually working on a similar project in-house, though early is very much in progress. Naturally, this means that any fan-led project which seeks to change the way old school RuneScape looks is going to be at odds with their own plans. And following from that, they had to release an update to this statement because they clarified their stance that it wouldn't be going forward. And, you know, the entire community revolted. And this was the other thing that people thought the reason that the Leeds Q&A was being canceled for was because the chat would get completely drowned out by the folks who play old school and who were upset with this decision. But the supplemental...
Not wrong.
Yeah, because, I mean, it even percolated over into the RS3 subreddit, dare I say. They say, we hear your feedback loud and clear, and we've been discussing that feedback all day, and we absolutely intend to act on it. The conversations have also included 117scape and Adam from RuneLite, two of the developers, and they're actively exploring options on how they can work together to offer 117scape's plugin as a bridge until our own version is ready for release. Now, they say, we perfectly understand that you all have a voice in old school, and that voice at times can be one of frustration regarding the decisions we make. Be assured, though, that we welcome your feedback, whether good or bad, and we don't always get it right. We are always humans, and now we are rectifying our approach. That said, we have also seen unacceptable levels of abuse towards individual staff members on social media in the last 24 hours, which we will not tolerate. The team is filled to the brim with people of passion, and please try to remember that behind the crowns there are real people trying to do their best for the game and its community. We know we need to do better in providing a clearer vision for our client, which is why we made this decision yesterday and what this means to the game and community in the longer term, and we will start to do this over the coming days. Okay, so a lot to unpack. Third-party developer makes RuneScape HD for old school. Jagex shuts it down. It draws the attention of PC Gamer magazine with an article posted there. 117scape, the mod author, says they have dedicated over 2,000 hours in the last 2 years to make RuneLite HD. 2,000 hours.
Well, why would you do that?
Right, and my response to this is that if you are this dedicated to RuneScape through this client, why haven't you sought to apply there for a job yet? That's my question. Why not work internally and do what you're doing? Because you know they're going to eventually go this direction. Mm-hmm. I think the best thing that would come from this is if the mod author got hired on to the old school team. Because Jagex says that their version of HD is still in very early exploration stages, and we need to be clear that a mod on top of a client is not the same thing as doing OSRS HD.
Oh.
So, That's something that we also need to be clear about. But the PC Gamer article was written at the time when 117 still was not having positive dialogue with Jagex. That seems to have changed now based on the statement. And 117 even said that they offered Jagex a compromise, and there's a key word there, compromise. You really don't want to offer compromises to companies. It needs to be a collaborative effort, not, you know, offering compromises in the reform of removing their product once Jagex released theirs and giving Jagex, quote, collaborative control over Runelite HD's visual style. Now, I appreciate the time that people put into something like this. Obviously, we've done one in a similar amount of time to this podcast and whatnot. But at the same time, you can't just expect, I think, to completely change the visual style of a game. And as a result of that, I think it needs to be collaborative rather than offering compromise with this going forward. So I'm eager to see where this goes in the coming weeks. What do you think on this?
Well, at first I thought Jagex said F around and find out, and that's kind of what happened. But the more I think about it, the more I wonder, and I can't help but to think, what if this was a client that had a text-to-speech functionality or something like that? How would I feel about it then? And then it gets a little bit murkier, like I think,
and the client is open source, so in theory you could, you know, hire a developer, Tanis, and have that added to it and make old school more accessible than RS3 for you.
Right? So, I mean, I actually think that the outcome of maybe, you know, if not a job, I would say maybe some consulting, some kind of collaboration, that would be good. Of course, I can't help but to think how that's turned out in the past.
Yeah. You're thinking always of the video types, right?
Yeah.
The only one to not get fired was Modley.
Yeah. But like I said, I mean, it's different when you think about it. Like, you know, when you think about it being an HD client, you're like, well, you know, they didn't really have the right to do that. But what if it was for an accessibility purpose or something else? Then you have to ask, well, if the company's not going to do it, then why inhibit someone else that is? So I don't know.
Legal, probably.
Probably, and I'm sure it's I don't know. I don't know how they would make money off of it, but maybe they're afraid they're going to make money off of it somehow.
Yeah. And, you know, we just need to be 100% clear here that being a private company, a closed source game, Jagex maintains complete rights to anything that is RuneScape related. And
yeah, I'm.
You hope that they're going to have a collaborative discussion behind it, but at the same time, if legal just said to completely shut them down, that would be the answer to it. Which would be unfortunate, but it would just have to be accepted at that point. And I think the team, the old school team, is showing a remarkable amount of give and take with this, given the update that they put out, agreeing that, you know, hey, maybe we can make this plugin available until their own version is ready. Because in addition to HD, Jagex says, and I've been paying attention to this, they've actually been working on a number of changes to the old school client in recent months, including moving it to a C++ base over a Java base, bringing in things like mouse over text rather than having that text in the top left corner there. Uh-oh. So they've been making some changes on that front.
Uh-oh. We get mouse over text and some key binding, then watch out.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to get your key binding and action bar, but nonetheless.
Well, I don't need an action bar, just if I couldn't.
Right, key binds to open certain things up and the like. I see.
Yeah.
But, you know, the reason I bring this up is it's an interesting thing to just watch what's happening on the other side, so to speak. It's completely different than RS3 in that and the collaborative nature behind that team. And the last thing I have to say on this is that with lots of people playing old school, the question that I always have is how long does the company itself let old school run without being monetized in some way? You know what I mean?
Well, maybe there's more monetization there than meets the eye, right?
Well, they just have bonds.
Right, and I wonder how much, how well those bonds do, because they're probably used for membership, like, primarily.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they have to be used for membership, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
And I think the last thing I also want to say about it is, like, you know, you made a good point where when you said that, you know, it is up to Jagex, just like it's up to every game. Like, every game that you have a mod for, they're either cool with it or they're not, right? That's why you can't mod some games. Like, you just can't. So we gotta keep that in mind, right?
Yeah, like, and you know, remember our discussion with Mod Warden? He said, what would RuneScape look like if players could create their own mods for it?
Yeah,
right here. Right here.
Well, but see, this brings up something that I've been really worried about this week. Maybe it was last part of last week too. I feel like Mod Warden's had a huge amount of success, but somehow there's other forces that are encroaching, because I'm seeing it with the monetization. I'm seeing it with this. And it doesn't seem to line up with what he's always said. So does that mean there's pressure from the top? Was there pressure from legal? I mean, but it feels like there's something from somewhere, because I don't think that's where his heart is at all.
Yeah, and perhaps that's a discussion we need to have further, focusing solely on the RS3 side. So,
yeah.
All right. So, if you play old school, we covered it here. We covered it here. We don't normally do that, but we did. And who knows? That could be a sign of things to come.
And I still tied it to RS3. So,
yay!
You're welcome.
Well done. And you know, that's actually really interesting now that you think about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be dedicating some thought to that this evening, I think. All right, let us move on to picks of the week. You can start us off. What do you got?
So this week I have a book named Sinned, and it's the guide to email for the office and home. Pretty quick read. It's not real big, but it was recommended to my team. I said it was recommended to me earlier. Shane's like, oh, so yeah, promise email. No, it was we have like coffee chats on Mondays, which, you know, so the people that use our glasses and the coaches, we'll all get together and we just, you know, sit around, have some time for talk and questions and all that. During one of these coffee chats, my boss had recommended this book called Sinned. And I read it and I really think it's good. Anybody that is, you know, working remotely or dealing with a lot of email, it's a good book. It kind of gives you a lot of tips and things you might not necessarily thought about. I know I didn't at first, because I'm used to being with all you. Like, no one does proper stuff in Discord. You're just blah blah blah, you know.
Yeah, so there was
you know, so it was a good book for me, and that's kind of what. Yeah, that's my That's my pick of the week. It's called Send.
Yeah, and you know, you can tell me if this comes up in the book. I obviously haven't read it, but you know, the number one thing that was really beneficial for teaching me email was Google Inbox, in particular in terms of how to triage emails. Sadly, Google Inbox has gone the way of the dodo, but it really taught me that there's emails you can do today, there's emails you can do tomorrow, and some of those things have made its way into Gmail in general. But the number one thing that I picked up from that, in addition to the triage side, is that when it comes to emails, not everything needs a response. Not everyone needs to hear a reply from your email.
That's correct.
And you don't always need to use reply all. And you don't always need to add extra people to the CC unless you absolutely need to hear from them on it or they need to see the email. Those are things that I've picked up from Inbox. Another thing I'll do is that sometimes if I'm writing an email and it's just an info thing and I don't need a reply on it, just at the end of the quick message, I'll just write no reply needed.
Very nice.
Because
look at you.
I like it when I get that extra little bit of help in terms of, right, you know, do I need to reply to this? Are you expecting a reply? Or is this just something I just need to read?
Yep.
Because if I don't have to reply to it, it limits the amount of email someone else gets, and I would like someone to reciprocate that to me as well.
Absolutely.
So yeah, is there anything like that in this book, or is that the general?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, there's definitely definitely some of those, and one additional, well, I mean many additional, but one thing that it drives me nuts. I've never been guilty of this, but I've experienced it, but sarcasm does not carry.
No.
In email.
No. Text in general, it does not.
No, it doesn't come across well, and there's definitely a there's definitely a section on that. Say what you mean what you say.
Yeah, that's how I like to actually move through life. So that's good.
Yep, but yeah, that's my pick. What do you got, Shane?
All right, so this is something that's helped us do the podcast here, in particular weeks when we have multiple guests on the show. So I'm not going to bore you guys with the details on this because we could be here for hours if we wanted to discuss this, but effectively what I do for weeks when we have multiple people on the show is I run multiple Discord clients. And the way of doing this on macOS is through the web browser because let's just say it's hard to edit the application binary on macOS. You can't add shortcut arguments as easy as you can on Windows. So the answer is a web browser for it. But rather than, you know, just opening up numerous Chrome tabs, there's a different web browser out there. And I use this to also manage different multiple Patreons as well, and multiple buffers and multiple Twitter accounts and everything. It's an app called Stack Browser, and it's only Mac related. But what it does is it allows you to have multiple copies of each open at a time. So what I can do is I can open three different Discords and have them log into different accounts. And that's how I do our multi-track recording episodes. I also do the same for Patreon. I do the same for Twitter. I do the same for Buffer, which is a social media client. And it puts it into an app format in my dock so that I'm not juggling Chrome tabs. And it actually helps quite a bit too, because you can limit it around. So if you have multiple Twitter accounts that you don't necessarily want to link to your main Twitter account because that's how Twitter wants you to do it, Stack Browser can do that. If you have multiple Facebooks, it can do that. It's basically a way of managing multiple copies of web apps. You could do the same thing with Gmail as well if you wanted to with it. And you know, there's actually a paid version of it where you can get what's called extra spaces, so you can further separate your work from your play tabs and whatnot, so to speak. But the free version is good enough in its regard that it just allows you to open up these things whenever you open up the app and be more productive with it in terms of managing those apps. So it's actually pretty good because it's actually also got a nice little UI so that if you have multiple of them up open, you can just, you know, search through this list and say you want your Buffer account for Clan Quest, boom, you got it right there, and so on and so forth. So it's really good. The paid version is $84 a year, but I haven't had a need to move to that yet, and I'm just using the free version. So it's called Stack Browser. You can get it at stackbrowser.com, and it's available on the Mac. But that's what I use, so that's why. That's the pick of the week.
Cool.
Yeah. It came about because actually I was looking at how to do those multi-track podcast recordings, but I found other uses for it as well. And, you know, at some point I should probably go into what the podcast setup looks like at this point, because it has changed recently, but that's a topic for another day. All right. Start us off with some achievements.
All right. So on September 8th, we have Jack Blog with 99 cooking, Omega with 200M attack, Queen Adina with 99 smithing, Sexpiur with 99 slayer, Zabros with 99 archaeology, and then on the 7th we have Crazy Leg 722 with 99 ring crafting and prayer, and then on the 8th we have Cyan R with 99 archaeology, Darkest Night with 99 magic, Quest Kitty with 99 summoning, Quest Kitty with 99 smithing and prayer.
Quest Kitty is a longtime Clan Quest member that even predates me, and he has come back recently. So that's interesting to see. Continuing on the 6th, we have Sethroth with 99 defense, Spy Human with 99 archaeology. Then on the 4th, we have Vapor 13579 with 99 Slayer. Darkest Night also got 99 Slayer on September 3rd. Then we have Jade Gizmo with 120 Thieving on the 3rd. Nordic Falcon got 99 Hunter and 99 Dungeoneering on the 2nd. Ubi Danubi got 99 Construction on September 2nd. Sethroth again with 99 Strength on the 2nd. And rounding it all off, we have Zodiac Hyde with 120 Strength on September 2nd. Nicely done, everyone.
Very nice.
All right. So what have you been up to on RS this week?
So after the Arch Glacier, I went right back to finishing off. I had all these, you know, I forget what the bars are right before Glorious, but it's the ones that you have to fold. I had a bunch of them left over from when I was making Masterwork. So I went back and have been turning those into Glorious bars. It's been a long process, but when I'm done, I probably could make, I don't know, 3, maybe 4 sets of Masterwork. So, you know, I'll have that there if I ever need it.
All right. Anything else?
Nah, it's been about it. I think I'm getting ready though to switch back over and go do some more mining.
Okay. Are you going to go, you're going to go farm your own trims for that?
No.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. No.
I mean, what would I do? Go stand in a corner when other people do necks or something?
Very true.
I mean, the ceiling's just going to fall in on me when they're doing rots. I mean, yeah, no.
You know, I've never actually killed necks, and that's one of the things that I'd like to pick up at some point, but aside from that, for me, I have been, of course, doing a bit of PVM still with that. I know that's weird. I say that week after week, but it's not just Free Death Week that I did that. After the show last week, I did some more time at the Glacier. I did a couple of hours of Carapac, believe it or not. Went back there. A few more Reaper tasks along the way. Nothing too strenuous. Rex Matriarchs, Barrows, that kind of thing. Araxor as well. And, you know, I'm honestly at the point now where I know all the mechanics for Araxor, and it's just a point now of refining the kills whenever I do them. I never thought I'd say that, honestly.
That's badass.
Yeah. So, but with that, of course, also Yak Track along the way. Been progressing that, focusing in on various things that I could do. If it's a skill and kill, either maybe do some archaeology to get tetra compasses because I like those. Clue scroll task comes up. I always do the clue scroll ones. The last clue scroll task that I did was worth about 13 mil because I got one of those elemental impetus things that upgrades a staff to a higher level. So that's worth about 9 mil. So the entire Yak Trek clue scroll task brought in around 13 mil GP. So those are fun. Damn. Lots of good reasons to do clue scrolls with that. But I'm going to have a lot of thinking and decisions once Yak Track is done, and I'm just going to leave it with that, and I'm going to let people think of what that might mean in their heads. And I'll just say it doesn't mean anything bad. It doesn't mean anything bad, but I'm going to have lots of thinking about what I should do with myself and RS once Yak Track is done, because like I said, when Yak Track comes out, the Yak Track weeks, I just love those weeks because it just provides me a nice path of something to do in game. And when that's done, well, I don't know what to do, so I got to figure that out. But I have a couple ideas in my head, and we'll beat those around when the time comes. But I think that's it for this week's episode of RSBNB Update, isn't it?
All I got.
Yep. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode. If you want these delivered automatically to you, please do subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and the newest one, Amazon. We're on Amazon Music, so you can listen to RSBNB Update on your preferred Amazon device. And of course, we're also on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. So be sure to give us a like and subscribe there. It definitely helps the channel out in terms of discoverability. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone. See you then.
See ya.